Okay, yeah, so I would just like to continue with a couple of more stereotypes. Okay, this is, we already had that. So secure data structure. So we would also like to be able to firstly define the security requirements on the data in the system by including the requirements in the class diagram. So this is, for example, here again the example of secrecy. So here we have a key generator which is supposed to generate a cryptographic key by making use of a random generator that is supposed to generate the random feed of the key. And the key generator is the key is of course supposed to remain secret, so no one outside is supposed to be able to break into the system and get out the key in some way. But of course, because the key generation algorithm is deterministic, and usually you should assume that the algorithms in the system are publicly known, because it's not a good way of basing the security of your system on the secrecy of the algorithms. But this also means that the random number which is used as a seed to generate the cryptographic key also has to remain secret, because if you have the random number, if you have the algorithm, then if it's a deterministic algorithm, you can generate the key. So as an example for a situation where you have a part of the system, in this case the key generation, where you have a secret or a security requirement, in this case the key is supposed to remain secret, and this implies another security requirement on some other piece of data in the system, and now you have to make sure that this part of the system specification is consistent in with respect to security. And this is what I would like to define now, again define a stereotype secure dependency now, which ensures this kind of consistency. So firstly, again, any opinions on whether this is going to be consistent data structure with respect to this kind of security requirements. And as I mentioned just now, maybe I should explain how this is meant more precisely. So the idea is that you include this security requirements at the data of the different classes at the class model. So here with the key generator, you have the secrecy requirement included at the class model, the secrecy requirement on the new key method, and also on the random method, because the random value is supposed to remain secret. And now the problem is that the random generator does not have this kind of requirement on its own random method. And this is a problem because in principle, you would like to be able to have the different parts of the specification be developed by different people, or you would like to be able to reuse parts which were developed earlier and so on. So you should be able to consider the random generator part independently of this overall specification. And this means that the random generator itself has to be aware of the fact that it is required to protect the secrecy of this random number. And this means this should also be required, or this should be specified here at the random generator class, which is not the case here. And therefore, that's why one would say that this is not a consistent specification with respect to these security requirements. So firstly, the question is, how can one again define this in a kind of formal constraint which can be checked by automated tools? The kind of requirement which I just explained means simply that whenever you have a communication dependency between two classes, then if one of the methods is required to be to satisfy a certain security requirement in one of the models, the class models, then it's also supposed to satisfy the same security requirement in the other class model. And moreover, in that case, then also the dependency itself should be zero-typed using the security requirement, because then you can again compare the communication level with the physical underlying physical infrastructure and make sure that not only the class diagram itself is consistent with respect to security requirement, but it's also consistent with respect to the underlying physical level, as I explained earlier. So in this case, as I just mentioned already, the formal constraint, which I just explained and which is implemented in our analysis tools, is again now violated here, because the key generator requires the random number to be secret, but the random generator does not actually provide this kind of guarantee. And therefore, this secure dependency stereotype is the constraint of the stereotype is violated at this package, this UML package. And if you, this means if you draw the diagram using a case tool and if you upload it into our analysis tools, then the tool will point out that there is a problem with respect to this security requirement. So the checks which I explained so far are mostly relatively easy checks with respect to consistency checks and so on. And you could in some cases say, okay, but I can also see with the bare eye whether this is fulfilled or not. It's still convenient maybe to have automated tools, but you could say, well, I don't want to take all this effort for analyzing things which I can also see just by looking at the specification. But now I would also explain two more examples which establish security requirements which are a bit more difficult to analyze, or maybe even impossible to analyze in a manual way. And there you actually do need actually automated tool support, which has to be quite sophisticated, such as a model checker or an automated theorem prover. And one of the examples is that of the so-called secure information flow. So this is also, which is specifically for databases, has been considered quite a lot. The overall requirement here is that you want to make sure that if you have certain data stored in a database and some of the data is highly security critical, so it should remain secret, for example, and other data is not security critical, and on the other hand, you have users of this database. Some of them can be trusted to read the secret data, and other ones cannot be trusted to read the secret data. And this is a situation which occurs a lot in practice. Then you have to make sure that there is no implicit or indirect or partial information flow from the secret data to the non-secret data. Because if that's the case, then the users that are allowed to read the non-secret data, if there's an implicit information flow from the secret to the non-secret data, they would at least get some partial information about the secret data by reading the non-secret data. And if you really want to make sure that not even a partial information should be leaked out about the secret data to the untrusted users, then this can be a problem. And this is what I'm trying to explain with this kind of example here. So here we assume that we have a database which stores information on customer accounts. So for example, there could be an e-commerce website where a customer is able to buy goods over the internet using electronic transactions, and this can be personalized by offering each customer their own personal account. And also the account should have an additional feature where in case the customer has already spent more than a certain amount of money, then the customer will be offered extra service of some sort by the transaction system. And so therefore our account not only includes the money, attributes which stores the money spent so far by the customer, but the specification of the system should also distinguish between two states, namely the state where the customer does not receive an extra service yet, and the state where the customer actually does receive the extra service. And while at the beginning, if you start from the initial state, then the customer has not spent any money yet and does not get an extra service. And now by this simple, very abstract specification of this kind of customer account, the way this works is now, firstly, you can write object can be called by this write money method, which means that money is added to the money attribute, namely the amount of the new transaction is added to the money attribute, and then as long as the attribute is still below 1,000 of whatever currency, then the account will still remain in the no extra service state. And there should also be a method which would allow you to query the current content of the money attribute and also allow you to query the current state of whether it's extra service or not. Because the other parts of the system somehow need to implement additional functionality if an extra service should be granted. And whenever the customer has spent more than 1,000 altogether, then the account will get into this new state extra service. Okay, so now the requirement is that for privacy reasons, the amount in this money attribute is supposed to remain secret, which is specified using this secret tag. In order to keep the secret, of course, firstly the write money method, and also of course the read money method also have to remain secret. So the data which is exchanged there also has to remain secret. But we should also notice that for some reason the person who designed this this view on this account did not consider the method which reads whether the account is in the extra service state, did not consider this to be secret for whatever reason. Now the question is, again, if we have this rather strict requirement that secrecy really means absolutely secrecy, so there should be not even a partial flow of information about the secret data, then the question is this a secure design of the system? So are there any opinions on this one? I don't know, so maybe, I don't know if I explained this level of information, but here the problem is simply to realize that of course also the fact whether the account is in the extra service or the no extra service state, this also gives back some partial information about the state of the money attribute, namely whether it's higher or below 1,000, which is also, of course, obvious if you look at it that way. But if you have a real complicated state chart, then in many cases it will not be possible to see this in a manual way. You actually need some automated tool support. So this is the challenge to now define a constraint which can be implemented in a tool which automatically checks this kind of constraint. Again, here the constraint is only defined in an informal way, but it is in fact possible to formalize this, for example, using temporal logic, and then to connect again the UML editor with the model checker and automatically check whether this kind of constraint which is associated with these low downflow stereotype is fulfilled by a given design model. So, here you also actually have to firstly formalize the execution semantics of the UML, of the state chart diagram, because in order to establish what the kind of state sequences are in the state chart, of course, you firstly have to define precisely how the state chart is supposed to behave. And therefore, what you need here is a formal behavioral semantics of the state chart. And this is also something we did. This is, on this slide, what I just mentioned here briefly, is actually quite a lot of work to firstly define the formal semantics, the execution semantics, and secondly define precisely what this kind of security information property means with respect to the behavioral semantics of the state chart, and then to implement a tool which checks this automatically. But again, the idea is that this should be done once and for all by the developers of the UML text extension, and then the users of this extension don't have to worry about it at all. They just have to include the no downflow stereotype, and the tool will tell them automatically if everything is fine. And as I pointed out already, in this case, again, the requirement would be violated, and the tool would also show this automatically that this is the case, because as I have indicated already, the partial information about these secret money attribute is leaked out via the non-secret RX method, which is not required to be secret, and which allows you to check whether the account is in the extra service or the no extra service state, and which again then tells you whether the customer has already spent more or less 1,000 at this website. Okay, the other kind of stereotype which I want to shortly explain, which is also quite difficult to check manually, is the secure use of cryptography in a system specification. And the example I show here, which of course you cannot read in detail, but that's not the point here, and that's the example of a cryptographic protocol which was proposed at the IEEE InfoComm conference in 1999. This is actually supposed to be a variant of the security protocol TLS, which is the current version of the SSL protocol. And this is the same protocol which is actually used in many web browsers. Of course, well, I should mention here that what I consider on this diagram here is not the actual SSL protocol, but it's a variant which was proposed at that conference. So, but it's still comparable in complexity to that protocol. And now the question is this kind of crypto protocol secure against a certain adversary model? And in this case, it makes sense to consider a default adversary, meaning an adversary, again, who is able to attack an internet connection by reading and inserting and deleting information, but an adversary who is not able to actually break the encryption. Because if the adversary is able to break the encryption, then the crypto protocol is not going to hack you anything anyway, because the adversary can simply read the information which is encrypted. So that doesn't hack you anything. But in most cases, the assumption is that the adversary is not able to do that, and so you want to evaluate this crypto protocol specification against this kind of adversary model. And so you firstly have this the sequence diagram which specifies the actual security protocol, and here is a very abstract view on the protocol, which just consists of three messages being exchanged between the client and the server a couple of cryptographic messages included here, and some checks performed by the client and the server. And in the class diagram, again, you have certain security requirements included here, again, you can see secrecy here, but there could also be other requirements such as authenticity and so on. And here you have a simple activity diagram which is supposed to specify the interaction or the coordination between the client and the server. And you have this overall data security requirement, which is now supposed to mean that the overall package is supposed to provide this overall requirement that the protocol, the security protocol, actually enforces the security requirement which was given in the class diagram against the physical level of the system. So against the situation that you may have internally, for example. And now again, the challenge was to define this data security requirement precisely, secondly, to define the formal, the underlying formal semantics of the execution of this sequence diagram precisely, and to define it precisely as a constraint associated with this data security stereotype, and then also to come up with automated tool support which automatically verifies that. And then again, there are other security requirements besides secrecy which are which we would like to check here. And well, again, unfortunately, as it turned out, when we used our tools with respect to this example, it turned out that the protocol which was proposed at that conference actually is not secure with respect to the security requirement, which was, in fact, the security requirement which the authors claimed that the protocol was supposed to fulfill. So this was one example for the situation where we actually found a serious security flaw against the public design of the security relevant component of the system using this kind of automated approach based on this UML extension. And well, I don't have the time now to explain this in detail, but well, yeah, I can maybe if I have time later, I can show a couple of slides how this worked. Now, yeah, since well, I just want to mention this very briefly, that well, the requirement was that you should also be able to use this kind of UML extension in the context of specific security architectures such as the Java security architecture. If you know a little bit of Java security, then you may be aware that there are quite some sophisticated mechanisms offered by Java which are quite powerful. So this includes signed fields and guarded objects. These are quite powerful, as I said, but these are really non-trivial to use in the system context. And again, here it would be nice if you have would have some support by a UK-based design method which allows you to check whether the design which you developed and which makes use of this specialized security concepts that these are actually used correctly in the system context. And I don't want to define too much, explain too much detail because of the time, what this actually means, this guarded objects. But just very briefly, the idea here is that in Java, in the Java 2.0 and newer version of Java, you have these guarded objects which allow you to guard the access to single objects at runtime by making use of guard objects. And you can thereby you can get a very fine-grained active control of single objects. So this, as I said, this is quite a powerful mechanism, but this is very difficult to use because the access checks can actually depend on the execution time of the system. So it's not easy to see at design time whether an access grant will be granted at execution time. And therefore we also define a stereotype in the context of the UMLSEC extension, which allows you again to automatically check whether your design is secure in this sense that the overall security policy on the access control of the system is actually implemented correctly by the use of, for example, of the guarded objects in the context of the Java security architecture. And while I don't actually have the time to explain it in detail, but while if you are specifically interested in Java security, you can ask me after the presentation. So, here I just want to mention that you can use this in this context also. I showed a couple of stereotypes here. These are not actually complete, so in human tech there are a couple of more stereotypes. These are just were just meant to give a couple of examples on what you can do with this kind of extension. And also I should say that the human tech extension itself is not meant to be complete. There are still people working on that, and so there are still interesting points where you can try to extend the human tech extension even further. And of course, there are also other people working on extensions of UML for security in different directions, so it would actually be interesting to see whether one can join together the different kinds of UML extensions. I'm not claiming here that the UML tech extension is in a way complete in any sense. So it's just one possible direction which you can follow if you want to extend the UML for secure systems development. And it would be interesting to join together different directions in that sense. Although, it's important to note that it's not our ambition to be complete, because if you want to be complete in any sense, then in principle you would have to formalize complete books on secure software engineering, and that's a lot of material, and it's probably not feasible to do that. So far we only concentrated on some important security requirements such as secrecy, integrity, authenticity, and a couple of others, in order to show that this works in principle. But yeah, the sense would still be interesting to extend this further on. So just to come back to, yeah?
I have a question regarding the stereotypes. Mm-hmm. Have you located these stereotypes in the UML metamodel?
In the official UML model, metamodel. In this sense, our extension is conforming to the actual official UML vector model, in the sense that we only use the official extension mechanisms such as stereotypes, tags, and constraints. So in that sense, it is part of this vector modeling hierarchy, and this is actually what we use in order to provide tool support for UML tech. So, I wanted to also shortly explain a little bit on tool support, and I can also come back to this question about the metamodel hierarchy. But this question, the short answer is yes, so this is part of this overall architecture of UML. Now coming back to the initial requirements which I imposed on the extension of UML, which we wanted to fulfill. So yes, you are able to include certain important security requirements in the UML model, such as using secrecy stereotypes and so on. And you are able to consider different kinds of threat scenarios, consider different adversary models, internal, external, and different strengths of the adversary, from default up to military grade. Although I only showed a few examples here, but you can also define other ones using these threat scenarios. Then you can consider specific security concepts such as markers. I didn't actually say much about that in the introduction, but you can actually do that. You can, as I mentioned in the example of the security, the Java security mechanism, you can make use of specialized security mechanisms on the design level, and in order to analyze the system whether they use these mechanisms correctly. And we also saw an example which actually made use of cryptographic algorithms, and where you can analyze that these are used correctly. And you can make the analysis relative to the level of physical security which is provided by the underlying physical infrastructure. You can also consider secure business processes. And so this example of that free exchange business process. And you can be technology specific, as I pointed out with this Java security example. Okay, so now to close the presentation, I want to shortly point out two other aspects, maybe something which I actually mentioned a couple of times already, but which I just wanted to show on a couple of slides. Maybe firstly, how to actually provide the tool support, and how the security analysis routines actually work under the sort of the the bottom level of your code. So again, the idea is that the user of the extension should only be required to know the abstract stereotypes and be able to use the tool. But we, as the developers of the extension, we also had to worry about how this security analysis stuff is actually working under the hood of this engine in a way. So as a sort of mechanics of the approach. So just very briefly, how can you come up with tool support for which provides this kind of analysis routine? So firstly, well, as I mentioned a couple of times, the UA is defined relatively precisely, meaning that it is defined in English language in the official definition document, and not defined using mathematics or formal logic, but at least not completely. I mean, there are parts of the specification are defined precisely using UOCA, but these are usually only parts, only fragments of the UMA definition. So in order to come up with tool support, you firstly have to define the kind of parts of the UMA notation which are supposed to be supported by the tool. You have to define it precisely if you want to analyze the UMA model for things like behavioral specification, because then the tool has to know precisely how the diagram is supposed to be executed in the behavioral way, how the state chart is to be, supposed to be executed, for example. And this goes under the slogan of formal semantics for UMA, and of course there has been a lot of work in the, in the formal methods and software engineering community on towards providing the formal semantics for UMA. And we could actually base our work on earlier work, but we had to expand that because, as we you saw on a couple of the examples, what we need is an approach which puts together different kinds of UMA diagrams, such as deployment diagrams, together with state charts, together with class diagrams, as in the example of this data security stereotype. And well, the actions and activities have to be modeled explicitly because, for example, in a security protocol, you actually have to analyze what exactly happens, what which messages are actually sent out, what kind of data is included, and so on. And in particular, you have to analyze message exchange, and the other new thing is that you have to analyze all of that with respect to a adversary model which arises from the deployment diagram and which is supposed, well, against which you have to analyze the security requirements. And, well, at the technical level, in order to be able to develop analysis plugins for analyzing different kinds of stereotypes, firstly, we define a more general framework which allows anyone to define analysis plugins for UMA models. So this is not specific to security or to UMA tech, But this is meant to be also be usable by other people who want to define plugins which analyze your mail models for all kinds of things, or which maybe which come up with some kind of simulation for your mail or whatever. And this, if you are interested in that, you can also download this framework and can also use it yourself. And well, I can at the end I can again give you the URL if you write this down. And the overall idea is then that the developer uses a his favorite UML editor in order to draw the UML diagrams and stores the UML model as an XML file, which is the XML dialect which was defined by the OMG in order to be able to exchange UML models. And then this is uploaded into the framework, which contains the so-called data binding framework NDR, which is part of the NetBeans library, and which we can then use to access the information which is part of the UML model by using Java methods. So you don't have to parse the XML code yourself, but you can just access the information in the UML diagrams using Java methods. And then, well, this is the overall framework, and it also contains a web interface, it's a graphical user interface. So every time we want to define a new analysis plugin for a new stereotype, or maybe if someone else wants to do that, again, doesn't have to be in security, but it could be something else. Every time you want to do that, you just have to define the plugin which accesses the UML model through the general framework, and which does either some static checks which can be implemented directly in Java, or if the checks are supposed to be more sophisticated, for example, also analyze the behavior of UML diagrams, then you may want to construct an input file for a sophisticated analysis engine such as a model checker or an automated theorem prover, which will then give back a result. And you can put together all of the different kinds of analysis results and then give back to the developer firstly a text report which says whether the design is secure or whatever, correct in whatever sense. And secondly, also give back a modified UML model which includes at the points where there are problems which would highlight the part of the system that are problematic, because it's not good to just know that the design is insecure if you don't know which part of the design are actually insecure. So this is the overall idea, and we have the framework now, and we have the analysis engines for pretty much all of the stereotypes of the UML stack expansion so far. But since this is still extended, we still also keep on working on new analysis extensions. So much about the tools, and I wanted to really come to a close really quickly. So I think I'm going to skip on the more technical part about how you can actually do the security analysis. Just mention that this goes back on some long-standing work in the formal methods and security community, going back to the 80s actually, where people came up for automated methods to analyze specifications for possible security vulnerabilities. And so this is just again the underlying analysis methods which you need in order to implement the checks which correspond to the stereotypes in the UML stack expansion, which I explained earlier. And well, there's a lot of work being done on how you can do that, and we use the work in our context in order to implement these tools. So I just want to leave through that quickly. Okay, you have to consider cryptography in a, I don't really want to, I don't have the time to explain it. You need an adversary model. The adversary, again, can do certain things on certain communication links. And, well, I don't want to explain it. Just want to mention that you can express the security requirements which I defined in the UML stack expansion. You can formalize them using first order logic, and that's what we did, and therefore we can actually make use of automated peer improvers, which are able to verify automatically first order logic formulas, and this is also what our tools used. Firstly that, and secondly model checkers, which evaluate temporal logic specifications, which again are generated from the UML model, so that's important. So the user does not have to write the logical requirements, but these are generated automatically from the UML spec stereotypes that are included into the UML model. And yeah, again, the example, and it actually, well, as I mentioned already, it turned out that this was insecure. And here I only mention another example from an actual industrial system, which was then designed and is now currently implemented by Visa International and other companies. So this is a smart card-based electronic purse, and which we also analyzed. And there we also actually found a bug in one of the protocols, which is here shown as a package. Again, I cannot explain it in detail, but it turned out that one of the certificates which is used in the protocol, which was claimed to provide a certain security proof in the specifications, actually does not provide this security feature. And if you're interested, I can explain that after the talk in the break or so. And we have done a couple of other applications within the context of industrial projects. So currently we're working on a biometric authentication system together with T-System, which is the systems house of the German Telecom. We've been looking at security architecture of the Hypovereinsbank, which is a major German bank. We're considering SAP access control configurations also with the Hypovereinsbank. We are working with BMW, the German car manufacturer, to analyze a mobile emergency application which is supposed to be implemented in cars, and also looking at, together with the German Allianz insurance company, checking whether an electronic signature scheme they want to use is actually secure. And also more recently we're working together with the German reinsurance company Munich Re on evaluating their system using this kind of approach. And also a funny application maybe is a small company in Munich has been developing another electronic purse for the Oktoberfest, and we've also been analyzing that. So if you go to the Oktoberfest next year maybe and you see this little smart card, then you know they will be secure because we analyze them using UMLSX. So this is a funny thing. So we can actually, that's actually something we can hold in our hands and we can say, okay, we work on that. And that's quite a nice feature of working actually in industrial cooperation projects, because you can actually see something, some of your things running in practice, which is nice. So to close up, just mention that the overall idea of model-based security engineering, in this talk I only mentioned the specification-based part of that using UMLSX, but of course you also have to worry about the code, and I mentioned that in the introduction you can do this using model-based testing consideration, and we have also extended this more general approach towards the specific security situation. Then you can do the configuration analysis, I mentioned that already, analyze permission data, also in connection with UMLSX diagrams, or analyze firewall configuration, and then we're currently going down on the source code level and actually try to use our analysis routines on the actual source code, and more specifically on C code. And this with the goal of also being able to use this approach in the case where you have a legacy system where you just don't have any UML specification, but you just have the code implemented already. And of course, there's a lot of work still to be done. As I mentioned already, it would be nice to put together this kind of extension with other extensions done for UML with respect to security. That would be one interesting point. And pretty much with all of the things I mentioned, well, some work has been done, but other work was still interesting to be to do. I mean, other security properties, consider how security properties compose. If you have different stereotypes and you put them together, are they still, all of them still valid? Or do they only work if you have only one security requirement? And so on. So there's still, generally still a lot of things to do. Yeah, so just conclusions. Features of the approach is formally based, so sort of theoretically sound, but it has automated and efficient tool support, and it uses an industrial use notation, so it's also practically relevant. And the aim is to have an integrated approach, not just to ML models, but going down to the source code, and also consider data which comes up during execution time. Yeah, just as a final slide, you can find more information about that. There's firstly a book on that, which came out a few weeks ago, which you can have a look at here. And actually there's a PhD course not far away from here, so if you worry very much about that, you could, I don't know, sign up as a PhD student at Charles III University in Madrid or so. So I was asked for, by some people there to deliver a course in the next May. So, but there are also other tutorials coming up about this at other conferences. And, well, of course, there are further workshops, so the WITS workshop is actually security-specific and not necessarily UMA-related, but you can also send UMA papers there. Actually, for the next edition, the deadline is already over, but then the next thing will be the CC UMA workshop, and I have some information about that. You can also take that. And then there will be another WITS workshop at the ATAPS conference in 2006, which is still some time to go. But if you have any interest in that, you can look this up at this website. Actually, I'm still working on setting this up, this URL. So if it's not working today or so, you can just use my web page. And it should be easy to find it by just using for my name. Well, it's also... Yeah, also on this piece of paper here, if you, so I'm not sure if this works already, but anyway. Yeah, and in order to access, if you want to download the slides I presented today, you can do that using this this access information. And there's also, you can also use the tools which I mentioned and also download this framework. Okay, and yeah, so much for the presentation. So are there any questions still? Otherwise, I think we actually had a couple of questions already, so...
Yes, I have a question for the you apply stereotypes, you cannot define where you can apply those stereotypes or your feelings.
Ah, okay.
You can apply stereotypes.
Yes, so, yeah, and what is there, yeah, in general in UMA tech, it is defined precisely where you can put a stereotype, because, yeah, in order to be able to say what the stereotype means exactly, and in some cases you can actually put the same stereotype at different parts, so in the case of the secrecy, a stereotype, you can put it on specific data elements such as attributes. You can also put it on communication dependencies and also other parts of the system. Yeah, the problem is, of course, if you want to implement tool support, then you cannot just put the stereotype anywhere because the tool has to be able to find the stereotype and there's a trade-off between flexibility and between having to do a lot of work on the tool support side. I mean, and so far, we, because it's a lot of work, we really require the user to put the stereotypes only at specific phases of the UML diagram. Of course, in the long run, it would be nice if you could just put it anywhere, but it would be much more work on the tool support side, because the tool would have to look for the stereotype in different places, and in each alternative decide what this is supposed to going to mean exactly on the formal analysis part. But in principle, it would be nice to be very flexible there.
I wonder what is exactly the start point in which we consider security? I mean, you start from a business process?
This is a question about what kind of process to use in business notation. And what I explained with you, manufacturers, just the notation, and as with you, you have to distinguish between having a notation and having a software development process. And I didn't actually talk about the software development process really, although I tried to sort of hint or present the notation in a way which might suggest a certain process. And as you say correctly, the process I suggested here is to actually start with the business process and start with the use cases, which were the first stereotypes I explained, and then get to the business process, and then maybe decide which kind of architecture you're going to use, which was the secure link stereotype, and then go to the data structure, and then also define the behavior of the system. And so the order of the stereotypes which I presented here somehow suggests a certain development process to be followed. But I don't want to be too strict here, because in different situations you could be forced to take a different route. I mean, you could be, maybe you might have a certain architecture forced upon you from the start, then you would, I guess, start with the architecture, it's already there, and then you would have to see how to define the business processes so that they can actually be implemented on the given architecture. Or you might be more liberal, you might, for some reason, might have more choices with respect to the architecture, and then you could start with the business process and maybe firstly go to the data structure or whatever. You know, it really depends on the current software project you worry about. So while I claim that you can use the notation independently of the actual project, I also think, that's my personal opinion, that the process which is used may be more dependent on the actual software project which you have. Depending on what kind of part of the system exists already, do you have to do early engineering, do you have to adapt the new part with the old stuff, and it really depends on what's already there, what your requirements are, what the infrastructure is of the system, and so on. So, and therefore, I didn't actually talk about that much in this presentation, but yeah. One possible route would be to start with the business process in hand.
Okay, and the last question, what do you think about the new monster of the UMLQ?
That's a good question. In this presentation, you could see that a couple of slides when I talked about tools, I still talked about UML 1.5, which is pretty much not the current version anymore. So UML 2.0 is, I think, almost officially adopted now, at least it's the last version. And I'm not actually sure what the current state is now. So it's a lengthy process. And, now I'm pretty much sure how UML 2.0 is going to look like, and there are actually a couple of books already who claim that they know what it's going to look like and so on. But the problem is, if you want to provide tool support, then it takes a lot of time to implement that. So we have looked at UML 2.0 and in some cases, the additions to the UML are useful. So you could also use them in the setting of UML 6, because simply some new diagrams were added to the UML. In other cases, it means that the execution semantics have actually changed in the case of activity diagrams, for example. So we would now be required to actually change our formal semantics of the UMA activity diagrams and also change the tools that come with the approach. And that's actually a bit annoying from the researcher point of view, because it takes work and time, and you don't actually get a lot of that really gives you a lot, except that you can say that you are on the current state of the art of UMA. But yeah, it's a problem, but we have to work on that, of course, because otherwise, in a couple of years, people will ignore the work simply because it's out of date. You know? Yeah, but it requires quite a lot of work there. Yeah.
I would like to know how could you model availability?
Availability, yeah. That's another
observation.
Sorry?
It's very typical of the sec.
Yeah, that's another of the security requirements which I did not really talk about much today, because I simply mainly for simplicity talked about secrecy and other requirements. But availability is another requirement which is important, of course. We haven't actually done so much work with respect to availability yet. I think the question with availability would be on what level of the system you actually worry about this security requirement in the first place. Because availability is one of the requirements which you usually consider on a more low level. It's not something which you usually consider on the application level, because there you cannot really do much about availability. And it's, you have to make sure on the transport level, for example, that certain quality of service requirements are provided by the system. That it's not possible for someone to attack the system using denial of service attacks or so. And this is usually not something which you can address on the application level. So in that sense, I think it would still be possible to include this in your main set in the sense that you can include information about what kind of availability guarantees are delivered by the underlying transport level, and then analyze the application level design in order to find out what this means for the application. So if the transport level says the server will be available with 99.9% probability, what does this mean for the electronics, the e-commerce application which runs on the server? So this kind of check you could do with this kind of approach. We have not actually defined specific stereotypes for that yet. So that would actually be one of the further work points which would be interesting. And I think it would be quite possible, similar to the other kinds of stereotypes, but we haven't actually done it yet, simply because we have not had time yet to do that. But yeah, it would be interesting.